The following teaching is brought to you by Crosspoint Church. For sermon notes and other resources, visit gotocrosspoint.com.
Was it a morning like this? Cold, rainy, miserable? See, we look at Easter and go, awesome, Jesus rose from the dead. They're all, yeah, stoked, excited. Not that first one. That first one, it was over, it was done. They had heard him. These women were actually at the crucifixion site and heard him say, it's over, it's done, it's finished. And for them, they thought, well, okay, he's saying we gave it our best shot. And so it'll be a noble memorial to sacrifice and love, but it's over, it's done, it's finished. And then they show up at the grave to finish off the preparations. Back in that culture, you would do things to prepare the body for burial. And because it was Sabbath day, the Sabbath starts on Friday at sundown, they couldn't finish it, so they go get the rest of the spices to go finish all the things you're supposed to do to clean him up and put his body and lay it finally to rest, and they couldn't do that. And they're on the way there thinking, a bunch of women here, how are we going to roll that stone away? They didn't go to CrossFit. It was going to be difficult for them to do it. And so they get to the tomb there and go, that's weird. Somebody rolled the stone away. And then there's this person in there, like an angel person that says, hey, he's not here. Ladies, you're looking for Jesus. This is where he was. He's not here anymore. He's risen from the dead just like he told you over and over and over again. He's risen. He's not here anymore. Go tell the disciples and Peter. Now, you hear that and go, well, the disciples and Peter, why would he say and Peter? Because Peter, how many people grew up Catholic here? Any Catholics? Yeah. You know, who's Peter? He's the first pope. Like, and that he's like the dude. Like, of all the disciples, he's like the capital D disciple. So why would you say disciples and Peter? That seems weird. And then the camera would fade to black, and we go 72 hours earlier, and they're in an upper room. It's a room they're having Passover. They had all come to Jerusalem for the Passover that year. Lots of people did it all the time. It's a Passover. It's a meal, a whole festival they had been celebrating for 1,700 years. In the middle of that meal, some weird things happen. Where there was bread and juice and wine. Juice for you Baptists, wine for the Presbyterians. He says, hey, this bread here is no longer about the old way of doing things. This bread is now my body, which is going to be given for the world. This cup, this wine that's here, not about the old covenant of the wine you would drink to. This is a new covenant, a new agreement that I'm doing with you right now. And then he did some weird things. He said, hey, one of you is going to betray me. Talking about Judas. He said, all of you are going to abandon me. My closest friends are going to abandon me. And then Peter. I love this guy. I wish I was more like him. Some people wish I was less like him. He's the always one. He talks first and talks most. Steps up. Not me, Jesus. Not me. Maybe these fools over here, Nathaniel and Thomas and Judas, maybe those guys will betray you or abandon you. Not me. I'll die for you. I'll put my life on the line for you. And he had a sword there. Let's go. Let's go crack some skulls. Let's go. And Jesus says, whoa, slow down, Peter. Tonight before the rooster crows to announce the morning, less than 12 hours from now, they'll all abandon me. You'll deny three times that you even know who I am. No way! Not me, Jesus. Let's go. Let's go get after it. And they leave the upper room and they go out to the Gethsemane Grove. And Jesus prays there. And then the soldiers show up to arrest Jesus. And Peter goes, all right, now's my chance. I'm going to show him. Pulls the sword out, swings for a guy's head. The guy ducks, takes off half the guy's side of the guy's head here. Jesus heals the guy's ear. That's kind of a whole weird another story for a different time. Look at it. But in the middle of all the ruckus and the craziness, he looks at him and says, hey, Pete, put your sword away, pal. Put it away. What are you doing? And Peter's going, well, I said I would fight for you. I would go for it with you. And Jesus then gets drug off and Peter follows from a distance because he's not quite sure what's going on here. He thought this would go down way different than he thought in his own mind how he would die for Jesus. So he's back in the priest's courtyard. It tells us in the book of John that he's warming himself. This will be important for later on over a little, like a little charcoal fire. Not a big, but a char, you know, the flames of all, it's a lot of hot heat coming off there and warm glow. And he's there in the courtyard of the priest, which is where they did a lot of the civil trials back then. And he's watching Jesus, and they're questioning him and getting real aggressive, and they hit him in the face. They spit at him. A couple of times, like one time that says they blindfolded him and say, "You're the Messiah, huh? Bam! Who hit you, pal?" So he's seeing this go on, and it's escalating and escalating. He's getting like, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, what's going to go on down here?" And then all of a sudden, this little 13-year-old girl comes walking off, one of the little servants there in the choir. He says, "Hey, weren't you? Didn't I see you with him over there the other day here?" And go away. I don't know who he is. Happens another time. "Yeah, no, you talk like a Galilean. You're one of his guys here." "Shut up, I do not know him." And then a third time a person comes like, "Oh no, you're one of them. You're one of his disciples." Look at Luke 22. If you got a Bible, find Luke. In Luke 22, it says this. Peter replied, "Man, I don't know what you're blankety blank, blanking, blanking talking about." He's a fisherman. And immediately while he was still speaking, the rooster crowed. At that moment, the Lord turned and looked at Peter, and suddenly the Lord's words flashed through Peter's mind. "Before the rooster crows tomorrow morning, you will deny three times that you even know me." And Peter left the courtyard weeping bitterly, because it's over. And then it's worse that it gets over, because they drag him out there and they flog him and they crucify him. And he couldn't bear to watch any of it. He was. And here's what he knows. This person that he had centered his life around, that he swore he would die for, he was committed to, he loved this guy with all his heart and soul. He just was so on fire for him. The last memory Jesus has of Peter is, "I don't even effing know you, pal." And Jesus looks at him in that courtyard. And no chance to resolve this. No chance to put this back together again, to apologize, to try to make it right. It's done. It's over. I don't know what it was like for Peter on Friday all day, on Saturday all day, just sitting there going, "I can't believe I did this. I can't believe I did this." You ever been there in your life? "I can't believe what I just did here. What a mess I made out of things. I can't believe I did this." Or maybe for some of us today, it's not "I can't believe I did this." "I can't believe I did this again. Because I did it once or twice, and I swore to God, I swore on my mother's grave, I swore to everything, I'll never do this again, and then I did it again." And he'd be sick and depressed, probably borderline suicidal, just done. And the ladies all head out to go finish off the burial process, and they get to the tomb, and they're not excited about going there. For them, they're heartbroken, they're depressed, it's over. The stone's been rolled away. The stone's been rolled away, not to let Jesus out, but to let us in. I say, "You're looking for him? Look, this is where they put him. He's not here. He's risen." When Jesus said it's finished, he didn't mean it was over. Something different was finished than just his cause being over. He said that something brand new is about to begin. And go tell the disciples and Peter all about this. You know why they have to tell disciples and Peter? Because for Peter, "I'm not sure I'm a disciple anymore. What I have said and what I have done here." And this is for some of you today. This is not just, "Okay, before I was a Christian, I did some bad, janky, jacked up stuff." This is for people after you already became a Christian and you said yes to Jesus. You had yes to God. And the things you did after you said that, after you got baptized, after you joined a small group, like, "Oh, I'm not." And then the women come back. He's not dead anymore. We saw an angel. He told us he's alive still. He's alive still. And they go, crazy women. Here's how we know the Bible isn't just some made-up, fabricated thing. Because you're making this up, back in the first century, you would not have made women the first eyewitnesses of the resurrection if you were trying to gain credibility. Because women were barely above your horse in terms of how they were viewed. I'm not kidding. They were property in a lot of ways. And so you wouldn't put them there. And then Mary Magdalene says, oh, no, no. I was there, and there was a gardener there. Thought it was a gardener, but it wasn't a gardener. It was actually Jesus, and I saw him, and I touched him, and he said, go back and tell everybody. And I go, yeah, Mary, she's the one that took a $100,000 bottle of perfume and all over Jesus. She's a little woo-hoo cuckoo. She was demon-possessed and all that stuff. Nobody's going to believe her. And they go to the tomb, and they see the empty tomb, and they're not quite sure what to make. They're confused, and there's probably more doubts and questions on that first Easter than there is conviction about that he is risen from the dead. But this changes everything for them. Because if all we have is the cross of Jesus Christ, it's a noble act. It's a noble act of martyrdom. But we would not go back to the place like the cross and go, yay, the cross, if all he is just dead in a tomb. We wouldn't. I've had a chance to go to the 9/11 memorial in New York City. I've had a chance to be at a place like that. I had a chance to go to Normandy to see the graves there of men and women who have died in wars. And when you go there, you don't go, hey, awesome, let's celebrate, this is fantastic, yahoo. Because it's sad, it's a sense of, oh, whatever. And yet the cross has become this beautiful, powerful, amazing thing that we celebrate, that we're excited about. We have expensive jewelry we make out of it because Jesus rose from the dead. In fact, Paul's going to tell us in 1 Corinthians 15, when it comes to Jesus, it's not about his miracles and it's not about his teaching. What it's all about is that cross and the fact that he rose from the dead. If he didn't rise from the dead, we are wasting our time here on Sunday morning. What would Jesus do when he gave way of love and sacrifice? He said, let's go out and play. Well, he can't play golf today, but let's go play and party. This is dumb if he didn't rise from the dead. It changes everything. And there's all been all kinds of explanations for the resurrection. One of them goes something like this, that was a hallucination. That they had this mass hallucination all at once. They all thought they saw him there at once. Tricky part about hallucinations, they know this from people who study science and all this kind of stuff. Mass hallucinations never happen. Once in a while, a person like Mary, say, might be a little unbalanced, a little weird. Maybe she so badly wants him to be alive that she sees it, but 500 people all at once saw him alive. The other one goes something like this. Well, he didn't really, he died, but he didn't really die. He just went into a coma. So he looked dead. He was like a Princess Bride. He was mostly dead. And they put him in the tomb, sealed it all up. And at some point in the night, the shock of the cold and all that, he wakes up. And somehow, someway, he's been flogged. He's been crucified. And he has the strength to get up and go push a heavy stone, not back up the track, but push it over and out of the way. And let's just say for a second that he figured out some supernatural way to do that. When he showed up in the upper room, they would not have said, he is risen. They would have said, he needs a doctor. They would not have celebrated the fact that he rose from the dead. They'd have been happy to see him, but they would not have believed he rose from the dead. There was something beautiful and powerful that happened there on that first Easter weekend. How many of you grew up going to like Presbyterian kind of churches? A few of you in here? Yeah. Back in the day, we're going to go kind of old school vintage church here today. Because back in the day in churches, what they would do is on Easter, the worship pastor, the worship leader, or the pastor would get up and say at some point, he is risen, and the crowd would go like, he is risen indeed. I'll see. Some of you know what it's like. Yeah. So we're going to do this a bit today. I'm going to say it, and you're going to repeat it back. He is risen indeed. Sorry. He is risen.
He is risen.
Okay, really, see, the Saturday night crowd with half the people did way better than that. He is risen.
He is risen.
He is risen.
He is risen.
And they're stoked and excited because that's the good news of Easter. And we're right now, and we don't believe that he is risen, that he rose from the dead 2,000 years ago. What we're stoked about today is he's alive right here, right now, kicking it alive today. super excited about that. And right now we clap our hands, bring the band up here and pick the, send the buckets through and go home and get out to Easter brunch early, beat the crowd out. But here's the problem with that. What happens when Easter's over? And he is risen indeed as he is risen indeed. When there's doubts and questions, when our failures haunt us, when we're not quite sure what to do, and so it's, what do we do with all this? And here on Easter weekend, what I want to do is move you beyond just the inspiration of the moment, and now talk about how do we live the minutes? What happens here when this afternoon, next week, next month, next year, when all the, yahoo, he's risen indeed, is kind of, we get in the book of John tells us, gives us a great story to give us a pattern that we could use here. Find the book of John chapter 20. Actually, John chapter 21, excuse me, John 21. It says, later Jesus appeared again to the disciples beside the Sea of Galilee. Now, here's a word about that. You know where Jerusalem is? Jerusalem's down here in the south. It's 60 or 70 miles up to the Sea of Galilee, which for you and me, that's an hour ride. Everybody walks. There's no engines. So this is, some time has gone by. It says later, probably a week or two at least, maybe 3 weeks. Let's just say 3 weeks have gone by. And it's later now. The reason they're back at the Sea of Galilee is because they all live up in the north. They all live up in the Galilee region. And so they're back up there, and their Passover is over. They've gone down to Jerusalem for Passover. They're back there, getting back to stuff. They're not quite sure what to do. So it says, later, he appeared. Here's how it happened. Several of the disciples were there. Simon Peter, Thomas, nicknamed the twin, Nathanael from Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two other disciples. Simon Peter said, I'm going fishing. We'll come to you, they all said. So they went out to the boat, but they caught nothing all night. They're not sure what to do. Going back and going fishing doesn't mean there's anything wrong with that. Going back to your job after you got yahoo on Easter, going back to your normal life, nothing wrong with any of it. They're not quite sure what to do, because here's what's been happening with Jesus. He's not staying with them all the time, and they're not walking around. Jesus all of a sudden just pops in. He's there in a room, walks through the wall, literally, or just materializes there in the room, like the old Star Trek thing. He's just there. And then he's gone again, popping in, popping out, just gone. They're not quite sure what to make of all this. And so they're not sure what to do, so they go back to what's familiar. You and I do the same kind of thing when we're not quite sure what to do with Jesus. We know he's arrived. We know we're rest from the grave. We're not quite sure what to do in our life, so we go back and do the work project. We turn on Netflix. We go to a winery. We go hang out with friends. We're not quite sure what to do. So they go back to what's familiar to them. They go back to what they kind of know all about. So they go back and do that. I love this here. It says, at dawn, Jesus was standing on the beach, but the disciples couldn't see who he was. He called out, fellas, you caught any fish? You'll see an asterisk next to the word fellas there. The actual word there is, hey, kids. Hey, little boys. He's making fun of them. What we know about these fishermen is they may have been good fishermen, but in the Bible, every time you see them fishing, they catch nothing. Unless Jesus tells them what to do. Have you caught any fish? No, they replied. Then he said, throw out your nets on the right-hand side of the boat, and you'll get some. So they did, and they couldn't haul in the net because there were so many fish in it. What I love about Jesus here, he could have said, look, I was crucified and rose from the dead. What are you morons doing in your boat right now? Shouldn't you be telling people about this? He doesn't yell at them. Hey, guys, got any fish? He's going to meet you right where you are. Don't try to say, well, I wish I was better than I am. How about who you are? And just be who you are and be in the moment where you are right here. If you're angry with God right now, if you're doubting God right now, just go to God and go, I'm thinking freaking at you right now. If you're questioning God right now and go, I don't get this all right now, I don't know what to do right now, just go to God. Be in the present moment with God. He's not looking for you to be a future version of yourself. Just yourself right here, right now. Then the disciple Jesus loved, this is John, because he always thinks he's Jesus' favorite, said to Peter, "It's the Lord." And if I was like, "Wait a minute, it's Jesus." When Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on his tunic, for he had stripped for work. I don't know if that's Peter naked in a boat, if that's just the outer garment. That's just another weird thing. He jumped in the water and headed to shore. The others stayed in the boat and pulled the loaded net to the shore, for they were only about 100 yards from the shore. When they got there, they found breakfast waiting for them. Jesus shows up early, fish cooking over a charcoal fire. Oh, did you catch that? There's two times in the Bible it talks about a charcoal fire. One right here, where Jesus is going to meet with the disciples and especially Peter. The other time a charcoal fire is talked about, it's from the night he denied him. It's going to be important, just what John does here, the literary genius of all this. "Bring some of the fish you've just caught," Jesus said. So Simon Peter went aboard and dragged the net to the shore. There were 153 large fish, and yet the net hadn't torn. And commentators do all kinds of great stuff with this, like the idea of 153. When you do the names of God, 1, 5, and 3, we take the total up and divide it. I even watched a movie last week about how they've looked at other ancient writings and 153, the significance of it. Here's what 153 means, guys. It's super important. It means there were 153 fish. It means it's a real story. You know why we know there's 153 of them? Because they counted them. You know why they counted them? Because they're fishermen. They just got paid. They just made rent for the next 2 or 3 months. Their kids got to go do traveling hockey or dance or drama or whatever. They got paid. They're excited about that. So Jesus says, "Bring some of the fish. Now come and have some breakfast," Jesus said. None of the disciples dared to ask him, "Who are you?" They knew it was the Lord. When Jesus served them the bread and the fish, this was the third time Jesus had appeared to his disciples since he had risen from the dead. Again, I think third time. You ever thought, man, how cool would it be if Jesus would ever just show up to me? Because we rely on the scriptures and the eyewitnesses accounts. Maybe some of you had a vision of God in a dream or Jesus in a dream. I've heard people that have had that. Jesus has never showed up to anybody, flesh and blood, in person, right here, right now, today. But I think, man, if he would do that, that would change everything. If Jesus showed up here today, and yet we're going to find out, not so much. Because Jesus had showed up twice already. We don't know what to do. Let's go fishing. Let's put Netflix on. We don't know what to do. Sometimes being a disciple of Jesus, you don't know what to do. And sometimes being a follower of Jesus, whether you're brand new at this or you've been at it for a while, there'll be questions and doubts in your mind. Like, what does all this mean? Take a look at a couple, what Matthew says about this. It says, when they saw him, this is Jesus resurrected. When they saw him, they worshiped him, but some of them doubted. I go, are you kidding me? Jesus is standing right there in person. This is weird. It doesn't all add up to me. Well, here's what Luke says. As he spoke, he showed them his hands and his feet. Still, they stood there in disbelief, filled with joy and wonder. If you feel like, well, in order to be a good Christian or a Christian at all, I've got to get rid of all my doubts, just stop it. If you have doubts, you make a great disciple. These disciples who saw Jesus alive, who ended up writing the New Testament for us, saw him alive and had questions and doubts. You make a fantastic disciple if you have doubts. Doubters make good disciples. It says there, though they're around that fire and they've eaten breakfast. After breakfast, Jesus asked Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" Remember what he'd said a couple weeks earlier? Maybe these guys will betray you. Maybe these guys will deny you. Not me. I'm more committed than these guys. I love you more than these guys. Simon, do you really love me more than these? And look at Peter's reply. "Yes, Lord, you know I love you," but there's no, yeah, more than these guys, because he knows he doesn't. He's not even sure if he loves them as much as these guys. What we're about to have here is a clarifying conversation. I don't know, how many of you have ever done something stupid or dumb to the person you're married to? Stupid or dumb? If your hand's not up right now, you're a liar. And yet you can't talk about it yet because it's at a party, and then they're traveling for work, and it's just awkward. It's like the elephant in the room, and this is what's happening here. Around that campfire that day, that charcoal fire, there's Pete, there's Jesus and the disciples, and a big elephant sitting there because the last time he had looked him eyeball to eyeball, I don't effing know that guy. Do you love me? Yes, Lord, you know I love you. Then feed my lamb, Jesus told him. Jesus repeated the question, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Yes, Lord, Peter said, you know I love you. Then take care of my sheep, Jesus said. A third time he asked him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was hurt that Jesus asked the question a third time. You know why he's hurt? Just connect the dots, right? How many times did he deny him? Three times. He said, Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you. Guys, you have a God who loves you enough to bring you face to face with your failures, not to rub your face in with shame and guilt, but to look you eyeball to eyeball and says, I know who you are. I know what you've done. Do you love me? Do you love me? That's all he cares about. And we talk about love here. We're not talking about ooey, gooey, swifty, hooey kind of love. We're not talking about, ooh, I just feel all this awesome stuff. This word here is, in the English language, we love tacos and we love our spouse. In the Greek language, there's different words to talk about love. And the word that he uses here is the idea of agape. And agape is the kind of love that no matter what, no matter what, no matter how what you do for me or don't do for me, no matter if it's good or it's bad, no matter if it makes sense or doesn't make sense, it's what we ask people when we get baptized over here. Do you love Jesus? You treasure Jesus so much that no matter what happens in your life, you're going to follow him no matter what. Do you love me, Peter? He says, you know that I love you. And he asks him, do you love me? Not do you obey me? Not do you serve me? Not do you fight for me? Not do you give to me? Not do you... None of that stuff. What he asks him is, do you love me? Do you love me? I think as we look at this, put ourselves in the scene with Peter that day, sitting around a campfire, charcoal fire, remembering back to the time another charcoal fire. And Jesus asked him, hey, Pete, do you love me? Peter's head drops and he sees the scars in Jesus' hand where the nails had been. He drops his head, sees the nails in Jesus' feet, and he comes face to face I think as he looked back on it years from that point, what crazy love. When I denied him, he died for me. When I swore I would never do that and I actually did that, he died for that sin. He died for me. The most famous verse in the Bible, whether you're a Christian or not, you've seen it all over the place. It's the book of John and it's the Numbers 3:16. And it says, for God so loved the world. Not the world so loved God, but God so loved the world. John, who writes this account of Jesus' life here and tells us this story, years later wrote some letters to some churches. Here's what he says. This is real love. Not that we loved God, but that he loved us and sent his son as a sacrifice to take away our sins. We love because he first loved us. We can only love God because we've encountered his love, we've received his love. Because he went first. I want to encourage you guys, whether you've been coming to our church a long time, a little time, it's been a long time since you've been at church, come back here next week, and we're in a series of the book of Romans right now. And Pastor Beth and Pastor Brian, just a couple weeks ago, did these great messages on this. It says, most people would not be willing to die for a good person, though someone might find a good person they might die for. Like most people... Okay, you might be willing to die for, like, say, your mom. My mom's sitting right over here. Give your life for your mom. Maybe you do, because she's a great person. But no one dies for Steve or for Kevin or Mike or Justin. No, nobody does for sinners. It says, well, here's the crazy, amazing, reckless, fantastic love of God while we were still sinners. Christ died for us. And some of you need to hear this today. You think, okay, I got my life right with God years and years ago. But what I've done since then, said I'd never do again. I did it again and again. God died for that. People sometimes go, well, Christianity is just a crutch for like weak people. Yeah, if you got a broken leg, you need a crutch, pal. In fact, you need more than a crutch. You need a resurrection. You need something to, you're not just broken. You're dead in your sins. And Jesus came and said, look, I love you that much. And the question he asked that day is not, did you love me? That would have been a question I would ask. Remember what you did back there, Peter? Did you love me? Jesus, you don't have to ask that question because you know I didn't. I have denied you in my words, in my actions. Some of you think, no, I haven't loved God. I love myself. I serve myself. I've indulged myself. I didn't love God. God's going to tell you that your past doesn't matter. Your past doesn't define you. I don't care what you did. I don't care what you did 2 months ago, 2 years ago, 22 years ago. What you did doesn't matter. All I care right now, right here, right now. Not did you love me, do you love me? For those of you who've been Christians a long time, we can sometimes get this idea of like back when we first got on fire for God, we first became a Christian, it was like, yeah, amazing. We're all stoked about Jesus. We love him. We sing for him. We're amazing. And then at some point we go, eh. But we look back and go, yeah, I did love God back then. God goes, I don't care about back then. What I want is right here, right now, that you love me more today, right here, right now, than you did back there 2 years ago or 2 months ago or 22 years ago. That keeps growing and growing. Do you love me right here, right now? And the question is not, did you love me, but do you love me? And it's not, will you love me? Because Peter would go, well, I would have told him 3 weeks ago, yeah, I'll love you. I'll do whatever you say. And he goes, yeah, I'm not so sure about the future, Jesus. I'm not sure I could say right now what I will do. But you know everything. You know right here, right now, I love you. I love you. And then it's beautiful what happens here. I tell you the truth, when you were young, you were able to do as you liked. You dressed yourself and went wherever you wanted to go. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and others will dress you and take you where you don't want to go. Jesus is telling him that day and us today that before you're a Christian, before you come to a place of saying, yes, Jesus, I love you and I'm surrendering my life to you, you run your life. You're in charge of your life. You do whatever you want and go wherever you want to go. Jesus says, hey, I'm not your consultant. I'm not your coach. I'm your king, which means from here on out, you don't make any decisions for yourself. I'm running your life right now. And what's beautiful about this is that it's when you love God and you love him, then this relationship with God is not just crank it out, suck it up spirituality. It's, I love him because of what he did for me and how he gave his life for me. I love him. So when he tells me to do stuff, when he tells me to jump, I say, how high on the way up? Not because I'm supposed to be a good Christian. That's what Christians do. It's because I love him. I'm stoked about him. I can't believe what he did for me. And then he tells Peter, and hey, in this journey, it's going to be exciting. I got some places to go where you have no idea. Remember the Dr. Seuss book, oh, the places you'll go? The places you'll go, pal. It's going to be awesome and beautiful, amazing. And at times it's going to freak you out and scare you out of your mind. Because what he doesn't tell him is what church history tells us is that Peter at one point ends up in Rome, and the Roman Empire, seeing Christianity grow, has the leaders killed and they crucify Peter. When it comes time for Peter to be crucified, he says, I'm not worthy to die in the same way that Jesus died. Crucify me upside down. Now, if Jesus had told Peter that day in the Sea of Galilee, you know what Peter would have done? I'm out. There's no way I could ever do that. That's why God doesn't care. He's not going to tell you your future. If he showed you your future, you'd all go run kicking and screaming. He says, all I care about is not your past and not your future, but right here, right now. So, on Easter weekend, maybe not Easter weekend, let's go fast forward a month from now, a year from now. When he is risen indeed, as he is, when the feelings have faded, and you don't know what to do, and you're just, when there's doubts, okay, I know it's true, but I can't make sense of all this right now. And when the future seems so overwhelming, today, look eyeball to eyeball to Jesus who's alive. Look you right in the eye and say, hey, all I care about is, do you love me? And if you love me, look what he says to Peter next. Then follow me. Then just follow me. Not obey me, not serve me, not give for me, not sacrifice for me, not join a small group for me, not tithe for me. Just follow me. And which means that when I follow Jesus from time to time, I'm going to jack the thing up. I'm going to fall down and make a colossal mess out of the thing. All right, get up and just keep following him. When I said, I'm done with this. This is stupid. I don't believe this anymore. Go to God with that. That's where I'm at right now. Just keep following him. When it doesn't make sense, you can't figure it all out. We're going to sing today now some great songs about this. We're going to sing here on Easter because of who Jesus is and what he has done for us. These great songs about Christ being our living hope. As we sing these songs today, there may be some of you that are here today and you may go, look, there's some stuff in my life that I need to get right with God on. Some of you are feeling today, look at me for a second. They're all going to get up in place here. Just multitask. Stay on, eyeballs on me. Some of you are feeling your heart right now today. God's just coming for your heart right now. He's going, hey, do you love me? Do you love me? Will you just give your life to me? Do you love me? How awesome that would be for you today on Easter weekend. The last, on the deluge of 24 on Easter weekend, the storm deluge on Easter weekend, you said yes to Jesus. You go, but I don't get it all yet. I'm not sure I'm ready. You're never going to get it all. You're never going to be ready. All it says, I just love you, Jesus, and I'm in. He said, then it's just start following me. For some of you, it means to follow Jesus, that first step of faith, to say yes. If that's your first step today on that connection card that Grant had you fill out, jot us a note about that. We want to talk about what that means to take those first steps and those next steps and what it means to discover and follow Jesus. And there's some of us that are here today. We sing a song here. 1,000 times I've failed, still your mercy remains. There's more mercy in Jesus than there is sin in you. And you think, well, I can't believe I did it again. Jesus will never forget that. Who do you think you are, pal? You think you really can out-sin the grace of God? Please. 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 Just get honest with that and go, God, I get some things straight with you. I want to confess that to you right here, right now, my seat. Our prayer team will be at the back of the room today. If you have questions about anything, about becoming a Christian or about just getting some things straight, or maybe you came in today just carrying some weight and some stress and some difficulty in your life, make your way back there and be back there and let them pray with you and pray for you about that. Normally here at Crosspoint, about every weekend, except for Christmas and Easter, we give you a chance during this next couple of songs to come and receive communion. We're not doing that today for a couple reasons. The main reason is this, is that on Easter weekend here, we're not celebrating the death of Jesus. We're celebrating the fact that he's risen. Some of you are getting it. We're not celebrating the fact that he is dead. We are celebrating the fact that he is risen.
He is risen indeed.
He is risen.
He is risen indeed.
He is risen. Then get up on your feet and let's sing.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to this podcast. For more resources, check out gotocrosspoint.com.